Thank you for the music tonight, Art and Roger and choir and musicians. It's been a great evening. Since this will be my final Christmas message, I found myself the other day kind of in a, Charles Dickens mood, reflecting on Christmas's past and all the Christmas sermons I've delivered over the years. I have nearly 40 of them on file. 24 from this congregation alone. That's a lot of messages about the exact same story. A lot of looking for fresh ways to deal with the same themes year after year. A lot of Mary, Joseph, shepherds, angels, and sweet little baby Jesus. A lot of trying to find new ways to tell what is perhaps the most familiar story in the world. Because you've likely heard that story more times than you can count. Read it, watched it, sang it, just in the last couple months alone. And that, in turn, can lead people to a certain amount of misguided efforts at being creative sometimes. For adding details to the story that just aren't there, like a gruff innkeeper and his kindlier wife, not actually part of the story. Or Mary riding a donkey. No donkey in Luke's account. Or talking animals, or little drummer boys, or three kings showing up on Christmas night. Nope. Don't know how many. They weren't kings, and they weren't there on Christmas. And now I'm feeling really bad about disappointing you. Okay? In fact, Pastor Mike and I had a conversation last week about bad Christmases over the years, in which we recounted some of the ill-advised ways we have tried to tease out something new from that old familiar story and make it a little more fresh, a little relevant. I told him about a sermon I did a long time ago now in which I spent over half the message talking about an obscure African bird called the hornbill, trying desperately to relate its behavior to the self-sacrifice of God in the birth of Jesus. You know, it didn't go over so well. People came to worship expecting a baby in a manger, and what they got was an ornithology lesson. I think they would have been happier hearing a sermon about a talking donkey, because at least that would have felt a little bit more like Christmas. Afterward, I greeted them at the back of the door like I always do, and they were so disturbed they barely thought to say Merry Christmas. Another year, we did a drama that centered on people reading Christmas letters. Some of you might remember this. I must have been in a foul mood that year when I wrote the script because one of the unlucky actors got stuck reading this incredibly sad, miserable, moroseful letter. And forever after, we've always referred to that year's effort as the very depressing Christmas. And then there was a year that we were reduced to staging a game show with a dancing Christmas tree. And Pastor Mike and I did a bit of ventriloquism. And I actually got yelled at afterward for that one by some horrified members who were embarrassed that they had brought guests with them. And now here it is, my final Christmas sermon. And if I've learned anything over the years, it is this: don't mess with a Christmas story. Sure, it's well worn, but that's why you're here, right? I mean, you're not here for dancing Christmas trees, or because you want things more exciting or upbeat or different. You're here, at least in part, because you want everything just the same as it always is, just like it was last year, just like it's always been. I mean, one of the uniquely powerful things about this time of year is how it always tends to take us backward into the past, a past that swims up from the depths of our memories, or a past that we desperately want to remember as being better than it really was, or a past that never really existed at all except in our imaginations. Christmas is the holiday of nostalgia, right? From watching the same movies year after year, White Christmas, or The Grinch, or Elf, or Miracle on 34th Street, or A Christmas Story, or seeing Linus yet again remind Charlie Brown and the rest of the Peanuts gang all about the real meaning of Christmas. I mean, Christmas never fails to remind me of my childhood, of Grandpa reading the nativity story to us after dinner, of going upstairs to look for Santa and always just missing him when I'd hear my dad say, "Yeah, thanks, bye Santa, see you next year," and I'd race downstairs too late again. Of braving the Minnesota sub-zero temperatures to go out for the midnight service. I mean, the familiar cues are everywhere. The same songs have been playing over and over and over again since before Halloween. The smells of evergreen trees and cinnamon, the decorations, the scale-busting parties and cookie exchanges. I was at the mall with Barbie before Thanksgiving. We wandered through a Christmas store that was already up and doing brisk business. And I was struck by how so much of the merchandise had about it this sense of trying to recapture something from days gone by. And things that feel traditional, even if none of those traditions actually exist for most folks anymore. Scenes of tromping through the woods to cut down a Christmas tree. Ornaments and paintings that include cars and pickups from the 50s. People dressed in Victorian clothing, caroling at a house lit only by candlelight. Riding a sleigh bundled up against the chill night air. It's all beautiful and familiar and nostalgic, and it reminds us of things that used to be or things that never were but we always wish had been. And it's the familiarity and nostalgia that usually combine to make Christmas the most wonderful time of the year, at least for most of us. Not all of us. And it can also be the most difficult time of the year for some of us. But that's why Christmas needs to be more than nostalgia. And it's why this story, as familiar as it may happen to be, has power that no other story has. And if we limit this story to something charming and familiar that we like remembering, that fits into a yearly dive into sweet or imagined memories, then we run the risk of missing out on what tonight is really all about. And how what happened once in a stable can happen for us and in us. Because if the Christmas story is anything at all, it is blunt and honest and it tells the truth. There is not one normal scene in this story. A teenage virgin is pregnant. The Son of God is born in a dirty, out-of-the-way, forgotten place and virtually no one even notices. Angels show up at every turn. Smelly, grubby shepherds run through the night to catch a glimpse. And by the way, who's watching the sheep while they're on their midnight excursion, huh? Later on in Matthew's version, we get a treacherous ruler who engages in mass infanticide and pagan seekers following a star. The whole thing can sound more like a deranged playwright's midnight tragedy than the Word of God. But there's no story like it. Because at its beating heart, it tells of a God coming to earth in the middle of a mess. I witnessed the birth of all three of our children. And if you've ever been the one on the delivery table, or like me, the one who's standing nearby, there is absolutely no doubt in the world that birth is not really something to grace a greeting card. It is nothing if not messy. When our firstborn, Jeff, came into the world, it began in the early morning and we lived in rural northern Minnesota. We piled in the car to take the 45-minute drive to the hospital, and I counted 8 deer standing in the ditch along the road in the first 10 miles, all waiting to jump out in front of the car, which would force me to deliver the baby in the back seat. I could hear them saying, here he comes, get ready. Well, that didn't happen. But when we got to the hospital and into the delivery room, complete with scratchy gowns and beeping monitors and unfamiliar people popping in and out, and the doctor was concerned that he might have lost Jeff's heartbeat, and everything suddenly became an explosion of emergency procedures, scissors with no painkillers, and desperate rushing about. And then Jeff was there. And we met him. And he was fine. And Barbie held him amid the blood and fluids and wadded up towels and sighs of relief. And that is the beautiful mess of birth. And tonight, God comes in the mess. A living, breathing word of peace and hope in the middle of lives that so often feel just a tiny bit panicked and a whole lot in need of hope. The messiness of the Nativity meets us in the messiness of our lives. And none of the feelings, none of the experiences that we live with every other day of the year, that maybe if we're lucky, we've managed to set aside for these few hours, the grief, the loss, the disbelief, the sadness that someone is not here to celebrate with us this year, the shame or the joy, the nostalgia, real or imagined, the sense of lost hope, or the boundless excitement. None of that is lost on this Christmas story. It's all in there. For each season of anxiety, there's Joseph trying to anticipate what his friends and family will think of his bizarre situation. For every instance of shame, there is Mary, the pregnant, unmarried teenager. For each glimmer of hope, there are the shepherds hurriedly running to Bethlehem to see their newborn king. For every moment of unrelenting joy, there are the heavenly choirs piercing the darkness of that deep purple night. The singularly good news of this story is that the mess of our lives is completely wrapped up in this story. The story of a love so raw and powerful that God would come among us in the most unsuspecting way imaginable, in the form of an utterly fragile, dependent baby. And the courage of that love to come in that way when anything and everything could have gone so wrong. And how that God would risk it all for us anyway in this humble, obscure birth. The God who comes to be with us can take the shabby, hurting, dirty, abandoned, humiliating parts of ourselves and make them and us new. This story is about love incarnate, enfleshed, dirty and dusty and bloody, and all for the sake of what's dirty and dusty and bloody in us. Not so that he can make things just a little bit more peaceful or inspire us to be a little bit kinder or a little bit more cheerful, but so that he can utterly change our paradigms and everything we thought we knew. So I want to invite you to fall in love again with this old, old story. And I don't mean the sentimentalized version, the one reduced to a series of bland and comforting, almost numbing cliches. But more than that, I mean falling in love with the child at the center of this story. The child with God written on his face, and how he can be born in our hearts anew if we will let him. This Jesus can speak into the very deepest, darkest, hidden parts of us, here and now, with the heart healing, making all new grace and mercy and loving kindness language of God. In this last week, my email account has been spoofed, and all sorts of people have been getting emails supposedly from me saying, "Hello, how are you doing? I need a favor from you. Message me as soon as you get this message. God bless, Pastor Joe Campo." Unfortunately, no one has responded, and I haven't received a dime yet. Robin, one of our staff people, got one of them, and she wrote to me saying she thought this sounded a little fishy. I wrote back, "What? You don't trust that message? How about if I told you I'm a Nigerian king and I want to send you $1 million for Christmas if you just give me your personal information so I can transfer it to your account?" Well, maybe you don't trust that message either. But you can trust this one. Christmas is not the celebration of what once was a long time ago. It is the celebration of the one who was and is to come. It's holiness breaking out where you least expect it, because if you feel lost, this infant is God come to find you. And if you feel anxious, this baby is love come to earth, bringing God's salvation with him. And if you cling to joy and hope this night, then this baby is a celebration of that. But if you're fearful that that hope and joy will dissipate tomorrow like the dew when the sun rises, this child is the divine promise, the heavenly evidence that there is always, always, always beauty amidst the mess. And the sweet smell of hope, even in the stink of a temporary barn. And if you think it is only a sweet story, too good to be true, a nostalgic trip down memory lane, it's only because you have not picked this little one up yet and held him tightly in your arms. Or maybe you did once, but then you put him down again. But it's not too late to look into his eyes tonight if you have the courage. And see all of eternity contained within them. And know that the one who is in your arms is the one who will do anything at all to save you, because he already has. On a night a long time ago, when the world was asleep and people were barely paying any attention at all, a baby was born. And he was born for you.